program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Let's get to Lauren Toomey. Lauren, good to have you with us. Lauren, formerly the public affairs spokesperson for Americans for Prosperity in Virginia. Now she has her own public affairs and political consulting firm. Lauren, great to have you. You're live here with me and Andrew Vihorn. So, Lauren, Andrew and I are here, and we're talking about the state of politics in Virginia. That's what we're focusing our day on. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on where you think the Republicans are. I know you've covered this in depth. You're a consultant now. You've got your own PR firm since leaving Americans for Prosperity of Virginia. What's your take, Lauren?
Absolutely. So, lot to talk about here. You know, Virginia.
Hey, you want to speak up a little, Lauren? Ken?
Are you there, John?
Yes. Speak into the
Okay,
phone.
Is that better?
Yes, better. Yes.
Okay. Virginia can essentially be split up, right, into several different states within our Commonwealth. It's such an interesting state. We never have an off year, which is fantastic and exciting, and also a little bit stressful every year when November comes around. I think my take on how this is going to go is, I think once the redistricting court order came down, we lost the House, right? There's a lot of seats that were absolute shoo-ins that are now not that and are more of a shoo-in for the left, and there are also a lot of folks who last election, if you remember, won on a very slim margin, much slimmer than they had ever won before, in certain cases, a coin toss, right? So those seats before the court order were, before the court ordered redistricting, were in jeopardy. So we were already kind of pushing our luck with the House. I do think that we do have a good shot with the Senate, and here's why. Suburban millennial women, young moms in these outside of urban areas, right, are deciding elections. They've been deciding elections in Virginia across the country for the last few years. Now,
right,
within the Republican-held Senate, they've passed a lot of great legislation that has directly affected people's lives, specifically women. So talking about our telemedicine legislation that AFP worked on, that's something when we were looking at, you know, who's that affecting the most? It's young moms, right? It's a young mom who wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning, has two
other kids. You think Republicans are going to turn the tide on suburban women, which they're losing by the hour across the country based on Meditel?
Telemedicine.
I mean,
no, I think it's a number.
Come on, Lauren.
I think it's the telemedicine legislation. I also think it's the comprehensive occupational licensing bill that put Virginia now at the number one state to do business in. We were number seven 2 years ago, and now we're number one. I think that's going to help. Do I think it's an easy road? Absolutely not. What we're talking about a lot, and what this happens on the national level, are very extremes in conversation. So these moderate, kind of common sense women are not hearing anything that they find a place in the conversation for. That's the case with guns. That's the case with healthcare. That's the case with taxes. And the majority of women are not on either extreme, so they're just left out. And in this case, in the political culture that we have, if they don't like something the president tweets, they go and vote left. And that combined with the redistricting has us losing the House for sure, but an upward battle in the Senate. I think that Glenn Sturdivant outside of Richmond, I think he's safe. I think it's going to be definitely a good run for him, but he's got a great campaign going. And he's been moderate. He's truly been representative of his district. So I see that, you know, when the left looks at it, they can visualize that as a potential grab, but I don't really see it happening just in terms of how he's represented.
All right, so you think Sturdivant hangs on the win? Okay, so let's say he does that. I'm predicting right now. I don't know. He's losing now, but There's still 60 mm-hmm. days, right? There's a lot of time. So if Sturdivant wins, I don't see how the Republicans win the Dick Black seat. Andrew, do you?
What we were talking about off the air about the tolling issue. That's one of those local issues that can do that, but you've got to be able to get that message out. You've got to have the money to get that in people's mailboxes. You've got to have a get-out-the-vote program, because that is the number one pickup for the Democrats. That's their easiest pickup in the Senate.
That's the one they've already mailed in.
Yeah, they've mailed that in. They're starting out with 20 seats.
Right, so they've already mailed that in. So how does Higgins win that seat? How much is he raising money?
He's raised, I want to say, about $350,000. John Bell has raised almost $600,000. So that's enough to be competitive.
Right. But it would still be an uphill battle.
Absolutely. That's a tough district. That would have been a tough district for Dick Black to win again.
So if Sturdivant wins and Bell wins, which is the chalk right now, that would be the chalk now. Although I do think Sturdivant's behind. If those two won, then it would be 20-20.
Right, you'd still need Siobhan Donovan to win in Western Henrico, which I think she will.
I think so, too.
You've got Frank Wagner's seat down in Virginia Beach.
Yeah, I really can't see. I know that the Democrats think they're going to win that seat, Lauren, but I just cannot see a liberal, left-wing, progressive school teacher beating an Air Force pilot commander mom in a military district like the seventh, I think, right? The seventh.
Yeah.
And folks are hanging their hat on looking at Tim Kaine's numbers against Corey Stewart last year. You got to think that was an anomaly. That was a base election for Republicans. You can look at Corey Stewart's mm-hmm. numbers and think that is the minimum a Republican is going to get in that
district. Right.
It was, you know, you can go back, I don't want to say decades, but election cycles, and you can, you know, E.W. Jackson's numbers when he ran for lieutenant governor against Ralph Northam. That was a bedrock number of Republican votes. You knew that was where you kind of started at, and you were only going to go up from there.
Right. So, look, I mean, the bottom line is, if Wagner was running for re-election, he would beat Cheryl Turpin by 12, right?
Remember, Wagner had a tough race 4 years ago.
Gary McCollum spent all that money.
He did, but he had the lying on his resume about his military service that ultimately sunk him, so you don't know how that would have played out.
Right, you don't. Mm-hmm. Wagner ended up winning, I think, by 10-1 handily.
Right.
But Lauren, I can't see that district voting for a very left-wing liberal school teacher over a military veteran mom who was a Navy pilot commando fighter.
Right.
And Janet Higgins.
I agree
Higgins.
There.
Yeah. So I think the Republicans hold that. Go ahead.
I think that, you know, our memories in politics are very short, but we've kind of got ourselves on both the House and the Senate side in a little bit of a pickle. When we passed Medicaid expansion, you know, you and I were on this show kind of talking about why it was good, why it was bad. You were saying it was good because we were going to be united and it would help us with, you know, re-election, right? And whenever we do things that are politically expedient, right, we put politics over people, it always comes back and bites us in the butt. No one could have really anticipated the court-ordered redistricting. And now you have fractions of the base that we quite frankly needed to be 100% solid on, especially in the Senate, in those districts that are very vulnerable, that are saying, well, hold on, you know, this one went back on his word. This is why we have Medicaid expansion, and it's just something to, you know, to kind of, it's a very telling lesson, and history always repeats itself for these lawmakers, but, you know, you're going into a very, very big uphill battle where you need your base plus more, and you fractioned out a little bit due to, you know, putting politics over people. So I know you and I were going back and forth on that, but
we had reasons for
supporting it, right? Mostly political, and it's not putting us in a good spot right now. At the House, you know, like I said, I think the House we can save for next time.
Lauren taking on Godzilla here. If I can interpret what I'm reading between the lines here, Lauren Toomey, new public affairs consultant and your new political company, if I could read between the lines and interpret what you're saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems like what you're saying is, okay, Fredericks, you went with this Medicaid expansion thing, and you did this because you thought without it, Republicans can't win in 2019. And now you're going for universal background checks and red flags because without it, Republicans can't win because they can't get suburban moms. And what you're saying is actually that's backfiring because you've depressed the base that you're trying to turn out by trying to be politically expedient with guns and Medicare expansion. Is that your point?
I don't think I could have said it better myself. Here's the thing, when we're talking about, you know, suburban women, those millennial moms, when we look at these conversations about health care, about gun violence, about Second Amendment rights, the extremes are really far. And so they're not finding not only a place for them in the conversation to discuss their common sense views, when they see politicians acting in their own self-interest, they're 1,000% disillusioned. And then they go on CNN or they watch any of the, you know, fake news media and hear something negative about President Trump, associate that with all Republican lawmakers, and this is where we end up. So I think that demographic, you know, specifically in Virginia, in places like Chesterfield, Virginia Beach, Northern Virginia especially, which is, I mean, we're not fooling anyone. That's always been a grab. But they're more disillusioned than ever when they see politicians acting in their own self-interest, right? So that's where, you know, that's where we have a really difficult time. I think that Republicans could do a lot better with framing the conversation, like you talked about in Northern Virginia with the tolling and getting your message out, also on the positive legislation and things that have gone well in Virginia. The tax reform, the Senate passed an amazing tax reform bill this year, which we'll hopefully be seeing the benefits of around Election Day.
You're in the wrong job. You're in the wrong job, Andrew. We just spent an hour, Lauren, complaining that the Republicans have no message, no unified message going into this election. And you, in 7 minutes, have articulated what their unifying message should be. So, even though the Republican Party of Virginia... I know, Lauren. Even though the RPV only has $1,900 in the bank as of June 30th.
Oh, jeez.
Even though they've only got $1,900 cash money... And they have a Mr. Coffee pot that they got at a garage flea market sale in 1978, the last time I was there. And the roof leaks when it rains, and they do have two beepers. They do have two beepers. They should hire you. Right. I mean, you ought to be the spokesperson for them, because in 7 minutes you basically articulated a campaign message. They should hire you and put you out there. What do you think, Andrew? Tax cuts, no tolls. Right? That's your message.
It'd have to be pro bono work, though.
Well, they got $1,900. Would you work for $1,900? That's all they got.
I don't know. I'd have to do some negotiating there, I think. what's unfortunate, you know, when I look at Virginia, not only am I a resident here, but the Republican lawmakers, and especially in the Senate, especially this last session, have done some fantastic, barrier-breaking, life-changing stuff for Virginians. And, you know, we really got to tap into that demographic. I know there's always been the women problem, right, with Republicans and conservatives, and it's always been, oh, I don't know how we talk to them. I don't know, you know, what they think. They're very socially left, and most of them aren't.
All right, we got to go.
Being left out of a lot of conversations.
We're at top of the hour, Lauren. I've got to go. I'm sorry. We went. We spent too long in the weather. But as soon as I get you off, I'm going to text Jack Wilson, the chairman of the Republican Party of Virginia, John Finley. I'm going to put him in a group text, and I'm going to say you guys need to hire Lauren Toomey as your spokesperson for the next 60 days to get out some kind of a coherent message. Lauren Toomey. I think she should be the spokesperson. Andrew, what do you think?
She's doing a better job than whoever is doing it now.
Hired, not fired. This is our Disruptor Series. Tanya Burgess with us. She's running for United States Congress. She's from Dallas, Texas. Tanya, great to have you with us.
Thank you, John. Great to talk with you. Just going to forewarn your listeners, I speak Texan.
Oh, you speak Texan. We love it, Tanya. Tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're running in this race.
I've been in politics for over 20 years. I've been voting Republican since I was old enough to vote. Born, raised up in a very large family with Christian and moral values. I have seen such a shift in our country and been a part of that shift that has been somewhat a victimization of the American people, but based upon the decisions and choices made on Capitol Hill. Certainly, I support my president, Donald Trump. I've been on the front lines with President Trump since day one and very actively involved with his national campaign in the 2016 presidential election. I've been by his side and remain by his side. Definitely 100% promoting the America First initiatives under his administration and putting our country and the American people first, regardless of party. And I do not have any blind loyalty to a political party at this point. This is all about the American people rising up and saving our country, what's left of it, especially, defeating the Democrats.
I love what you're doing, Tanya. I just have to say straight out. I've got Andrew Vehorn with us. This is Tanya Burgess. She is running for, this is basically an open seat now in the Dallas district. The Democratic likely candidate, Colin Allred, he's a former NFL linebacker. He's a former civil rights attorney. And he's supposedly the favorite in this race. But here's why I love what Tanya's doing, Andrew. She's running for the Republican nomination for Congress, but she's running as an America First agenda candidate that happens to be in the Republican Party, right?
I love her platform. Veterans First, American Energy, Texas Energy. I mean, that's what we need more of.
And it's almost like Tanya is starting what we've always hoped would happen, which is we have a new breed of Republican. The Republican Party is simply a vehicle, right? And the vehicle is President Trump's America First agenda, which is going to endure beyond Trump's second term, and I think he's going to have one. And Tanya is attempting to do that. Tanya, tell me about the district. Give us a little history of it, where it is, so our listeners that are not in Dallas know exactly where you are and what the history of it is.
Well, this particular congressional district was held for 11 terms by former Congressman Pete Sessions, Rhino. He lost this district to Colin Allred in the midterm elections last year. It is 52% predominant women voters. Of course, I announced early on in March of this year and declared my candidacy, being the first Republican to run and take on Colin Allred. There's been several candidates that have jumped into the race. This particular district is very, very much Republican by majority. However, there is a huge swing vote there. If you look at the 52% of women voters in that particular district, predominantly they are Republican. Second majority is the independents. Most of them are very successful business career women. They're single mothers. They are wives of the middle class. The components, when we look at the metadata on the back end, the average household income in this district is between $45,000 and $75,000 a year annually. This particular district, which is a huge concern issue for me, is over the terms of former Congressman Pete Sessions, there is a huge poverty amongst minors under the age of 18 in mm-hmm. this district, and it is continuing to rise and increase every year. That is a huge concern to me. There's a huge opioid crisis in that district. There is also this issue of illegal immigration, where we have seen national news broadcasting ICE busts throughout this district, throughout DFW, where we have illegal aliens working for big corporations within the district and outside of the district and around the district. So we have a higher crime rate, and a lot of that is because we don't have the manpower through the Dallas PD to combat the crime that we're seeing. We have a huge problem in that area. My main issue is to focus on the economy, what we can be doing to help American middle class families, to continue to push forward to helping our veterans. Our veterans need our help and our assistance, and the only way they're going to get the help that they deserve is folks like myself going to bat for them to ensure that they are getting exceptional health care and exceptional return for the sacrifices they've made for this country.
And if you get elected here, if you're able to beat Colin Allred and take the seat back for Republicans, it sounds like you're going to be the kind of representative in Congress with a Republican majority that the president needs, somebody that's going to have his back, stand firm on China, stand firm on his Afghanistan plan, stand firm on Iran, stand firm on his tax cut plan. Is that a fair assessment of what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have been on the political scene traveling all over this country and assisting, you know, candidates nationwide. Last year, I was on the campaign for Sheriff Joel Arpaio as his director of campaign operations. And, you know, prior to that in 2016, I went up to Wisconsin and challenged Paul Ryan with his opposing candidate on the Republican ticket, Paul Nealon. And one of the big things that we combated was, you know, raising that awareness of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and NAFTA, these bad trade deals. And Trump is absolutely right. We're getting screwed left and right when it comes to foreign trade. And I'm going to stand with the president and stand firm in his positions on trade. Things need to change, and America has been flipping the bill, you know, worldwide. You know, hundreds of billions of dollars are going out of the U.S., you know, going into foreign countries, and we're losing our jobs, we're losing big bucks on trade, and it's time for us to take back what we deserve, and I'm going to stand with Trump on that. It's time to start focusing on what we need as a country to start building on our infrastructure and making better advancements into what we want and need here first, and then we can focus on any type of moral obligation that we have outside of America.
Tanya, how many opponents do you have right now in the Republican primary in your district?
Right now, there are three additional Republicans now on
the. We got to get you elected. We got to get you the nomination. Look, let me read you a text here from Fred in New Hampshire. He's chairman of the Trump campaign in New Hampshire. He says, Tanya has both mine and the support of the 603. 603 is the area code for New Hampshire. And he also says, great candidate, real deal. You're the one. Look, the people are lamenting in Washington, D.C., where we are. They're lamenting about all of these Republican candidates, Republican congressmen who are retiring. I popped the champagne, right? Get them out, right? Sessenbrenner in Wisconsin. Good riddance. These people have been there for 30 years. Let's get people in there like Tanya Burgess. I'm out of time right now, Tanya, but I want you to do me a favor.
Sure.
Can you get back? I'm going to be live at the President's Rally in Fayetteville, North Carolina on Monday. I'll be live in Fayetteville at some diner. Eastern time, 7:35. Can you call back in then? It'd be 6:30 Dallas time, Monday.
Absolutely. On Monday, right. Absolutely.
Monday.
I've been to Fayetteville. Matter of fact, during the 2016 presidential election, I was there with Eric and Laura Lee Trump for the week leading up to the primary. So I visited Concord and Fayetteville and Wilmington just absolutely love that area.
If they don't cancel the rally because of the weather, and so far they have not. Either way, though, I will have you on at 7:35 on Monday, so we can have a whole segment. I got kind of behind today, but I love what you're doing. And Tanya Burgess,
you're
the type of candidate that we need in Congress in 2020 if we are going to move President Trump's first America agenda forward. I love your energy. I love your passion. And as far as these rhinos like Sessenbrenner that are retiring, good riddance. Here's your hat. What's your hurry? And don't let the door hit you in the keister on the way out. Tanya,
absolutely.
Thanks for being with us. I'll see you Monday.
If you don't mind, if I can just take just a few seconds here
to
emphasize the misconception where most people fail to recognize that the Republican Party does not step in the primary candidate.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. President Trump says he was set this weekend to meet at Camp David with leaders of the Taliban, but the president says he called off that meeting and a separate one with Afghanistan's president after a Taliban bombing that killed an American soldier and 11 other people. Two of three men accused of taking part in the killing of a 9-year-old Chicago boy to get back at his father, who prosecutors say was in a rival gang, are due to stand trial. Jury selection begins Friday in the murder trial of Dwight Boone Doty and Corey Morgan, who are charged with killing young Tyshawn Lee in November of 2015 after luring him into an alley by promising to get him a juice box. The storm that already walloped the Virgin Islands, Bahamas, and North Carolina lashed at far eastern Canada with hurricane-force winds for much of Sunday. It knocked out power to hundreds of thousands of people before beginning to weaken late in the day. This is SRN News.
Something you need to know about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners. They're on a mission to help as many people as possible to get out of pain. They've been a consistent sponsor of this show. In radio, sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so, and then they're gone. Not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year. Why? Because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain, shoulder pain, hip pain, knee pain, etc. And now they're in less or no pain at all. That's the truth. I'd like you to try it. 3-week quick start is just $19.95. In 3 weeks, you'll know if it works. How's that? Is that a great thing or what? Cancel if it doesn't work. Otherwise, it's the best $19.95 you will have spent.
Tax problems can be extremely stressful and cause financial devastation. The tax attorneys at J. David Tax Law are right here in Jacksonville to be your personal advocate and resolve your IRS or state sales tax issues. J. David Tax Law focuses on your needs and case outcomes. Don't be fooled by out-of-town tax companies that focus only on signing you up without even working with an attorney. At J. David Tax Law, only highly experienced tax attorneys will represent you. If you have federal or state sales tax debt, payroll taxes, bank levies, wage garnishments, tax liens, or unfiled returns, have a sit down with J. David Tax Law and get the help you need. Never trust your tax situation to anyone you can't walk in and look in the eye. Call J. David Tax Law for a no-cost consultation at 904-507-4777. That's 904-507-4777. Or go to jdavidtaxlaw.com. Peace of mind is only a click or a phone call away.
Hi, my name is Ashley. I grew up in a household that struggled with addiction. By the age of 12, I was using drugs. From there on, my issues grew and grew. I had lost my apartment, my job, and my son. I was in a bad place, but luckily my aunt and her friend brought me to the City Rescue Mission. I've been in the Life Builders Recovery Program for 7 months now, and the way I look at life is completely different. I didn't know the meaning of even being a Christian until I got here. If it weren't for CRM, I wouldn't be getting my 3-year-old son back in a few months once I have graduated the Life Builders Program. I am just so thankful and blessed and excited for what the future holds.
I'm Penny Kivett, Executive Director for the City Rescue Mission. The summer months here in Jacksonville are especially brutal for our homeless neighbors and friends struggling on the streets. Would you consider helping us transform lives? Visit us at crmjax.org to learn more or make a donation to help others who are hungry, homeless, and addicted.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Guess who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
Joining us now in our Disruptor Series, Aaron Pettigrew. He's running for U.S. Senate. He's from Tennessee. He's a truck driver. He's a veteran. And he's trying to upset the entire Tennessee GOP apple cart. Great to have you. You're a veteran and a truck driver running for U.S. Senate.
All right. Well, let me also set that record straight a little bit, too. I legally speaking, yes, I am a veteran because I did try to serve, but I was medically discharged in basic because I had problems with flat feet and it caused problems with my knees, ankles, and hips. So I don't like to, even though I am, you know, a veteran because I did at least make it to Fort Benning, I still don't want any even remote appearance of false valor. So... But, you know, I also wanted to clear that up, too.
So far,
yes, I am. I am a truck driver. I've been a truck driver for a little over 15 years now.
So as a truck driver, Aaron Pettigrew, what qualifies you to run for Senate?
Well, it's a combination of things. Number one, I've actually been thinking about this and preparing about it, for this since before Lamar Alexander ran for his last term. Also, because, you know, as a group, truck drivers are often more well-informed than people realize. Going down the road doing our jobs and stuff, we, you know, have to keep our minds active. And a lot of times we're listening to the news all day long. You know, it's not something that many people get to do because of the nature of their work. You know, as a truck driver, you know, we do actually get to keep informed. And the other thing is that I've actually, been learning about the position, not just the stuff on the floor, but also the stuff that happens behind the scenes and people don't realize. And in general, I think it's time that more regular American citizens step up to serve this country.
How are you going to raise money to be competitive in this race?
Well, that's one I'm working on. That's one I'm still working on. You know, getting that first few $1,000s is always the biggest challenge. Once you start getting a measurable amount of money, then it picks up. But I'm trying to grow my following mostly on social media because of the nature of my work. Also, through, getting out and generally meeting people. Most people, when they meet me, realize that I am the real deal and I'm not putting on any airs for anybody.
So, okay, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. There's a number of other candidates in this race and
yes,
more likely to get in. Why Aaron Pettigrew?
Because at least out of the candidates that I've seen, now there is one candidate or one possible candidate that will have a little bit better understanding of things. But out of the candidates that I've seen, I'm able to connect the dots a lot better than most of them, at least with what I talk about, both on social media, what I read about in their articles, and what I hear in their speeches. Okay, I have a deeper understanding of how bad the swamp really is, and if we're going to drain it, you have to have people that can actually see the connections.
You also ran in 2018, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I originally started my campaign actually when Harvey hit land, and we still thought it was going to be Bob Corker in the race. After he decided he wasn't going to run again, then Marshall Blackburn got in. I kind of knew how things were going to go at that point just because I listened to a lot of talk radio and stuff like that, shows similar to yours. And, so I kind of knew what was coming, but I stayed in anyway. There were a few reasons, about her, but also in general, I'm one of those kind of people that when I start something, I carry it through no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so let me give a couple. Can you give our audience a couple of the key issues that you're running on, Aaron, that would separate you out from some of the other candidates?
Number one, I am absolutely firm on the Second Amendment. I understand that the shall not be infringed, and the reason why that was stated the way it was. I do have a lot of support from the Second Amendment crowd as well because of that reason. Another thing that... is that I am actually trying to repeal stuff. I'm not just sitting here, talking about, just the solutions that need to be done, but also cleaning up the mess that already exists. and I'm willing to look through bills. I'm actually willing to go through and do the work and see what, you know, what is costing us so much money that we're almost $23 trillion in debt now. And I'm actually willing to go through and just do the work. Mm-hmm. I'm also the most accessible candidate from everything I understand. I'm willing to talk to people, and I, you know, I'm actually able to, you know, publish my own phone number, the whole nine yards, on my campaign. So I'm, you know, a lot more accessible, and I plan to be more accessible as a senator when I'm serving.
Well, there's, I understand that some other people are going to get in this race. Beth Harwell, former speaker of the Tennessee House of Representatives. She ran for governor in 2018. She's likely to get in. Chuck Fleischman, a congressman who's been on my show, representing the 3rd District, he's going to get in. Stephen Fincher, former U.S. representative from Tennessee's 8th Congressional District, he's likely to get in. So there's going to be, well, there's five now. There's going to be like 8, 9, 10 candidates in this race for Senate. I just don't know how Aaron Pettigrew stands out with some of these heavy hitters in there.
To be honest, it might be a little, you know, I know I'm not denying the difficulties, especially not having any political record behind me other than the fact that I made it last year as well. The biggest thing is that I do have a lot of loyal support. Now, these are people that, you know, can't afford to donate to campaigns, but I still have a lot of loyal support. Last year, just spending $1,200, I got over 100,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And honestly, I've been reaching out to a lot more people. Plus, I actually started launching my campaign 3 days after Lamar Alexander said that he wasn't going to run again. So people are starting to notice me. The media is not, and the party is trying to ignore me because I'm not much of in the fundraising department. But at the same time, I'm actually getting my message out.
Well, look, I mean, the fact that you're a truck driver running for Senate, how do you campaign while still driving a truck?
A good portion of it is on social media. But, you know, and the other thing is that there are actually people starting to help me out, people starting to work on helping me get signs and things like that, and just talking about me. You know, I also actually take advantage of my job a little bit. Most of our loads with the company I drive for, you know, go in and out of Tennessee. So anytime I'm stopping in the state, whether it's at a truck stop or at a place of business that I'm picking up or delivering, you know, I'm actually talking to people. I'm just getting out and doing it the old-fashioned way, shaking hands.
Well, it's certainly a different way to run for U.S. Senate, Aaron. I'll grant you that.
It is. It is, and I know it's a challenge. And, I do face the political realities. But, you know, if people really want good America First type candidates, you know, that are willing to help carry on the message even after Trump is out of office, you know, they're going to need to start looking at the candidates they have. And that's in other races, too, not just mine. You know, now, of the five of us, there's, I don't know much about Mr. Gap, you know, but Dr. Manny Sethi and Clyde Benson are both good people, I think. I just don't see the fight, and I don't see the awareness of what it really is happening, and what, you know, at least not to a complete scale. Now, granted, I'm, you know, more open to talk about those kind of things, you know, being kind of an underdog, but nonetheless, it's still part of what needs to be done.
Well, I love what you're doing, Aaron Pettigrew, truck driver running for U.S. Senate against all odds and against all the establishment, and pretty soon the establishment candidates are going to get in this race, like Chuck Fleischman and others.
Yes,
and it's going to be fun to watch your campaign. I can't wait to see you on the debate stage. I mean, look, I think the fact that you're a professional truck driver and you're running for U.S. Senate and you're willing to put yourself out there and on the line and have a plain speaking ability to people, I think that adds definite spice to this race. And I'm glad you're doing it. I mean, this takes moxie. Look, like you said, you ran against Marsha Blackie, got 100,000 votes. That's nothing to sneeze at. That's 100,000 is nothing to sneeze at, Aaron.
Yeah, that was 15% of the primary, and that was with absolutely no recognition to start with on that race.
I know you got 15%.
In fact, a lot of people didn't even hear about me until the sample ballots come out because, again, I didn't raise a whole lot. I managed to get $225 last year. I'm well past that now, still not up to the 5,000 mark to report to the FEC, but I am well past that now.
Well, you surpassed $250. That's a good thing, Aaron. I got to go. We're out of time. I want to thank Aaron Pettigrew for being with us. Aaron running for the U.S. Senate from Tennessee. He's a truck driver. He thinks he's going to raise $5,000 by the end of this reporting period. Aaron, do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's AaronPettigrewForTennessee.com. It's all spelled out, AaronPettigrewForTennessee.com. I publish my own phone number and my own email on there, so if anybody wants to communicate with me, they're going to get me directly. So
right,
please,
Aaron,
get to know me and get to know, the choices that you have.
Aaron, thank you. John Fredericks, Radio Network.
Thank you for
Network.
Your time, sir.
Aaron Pettigrew, truck driver, candidate, U.S. Senate. I'll be right back. Beautiful. But Coach Walk joining us now. Hey, Coach, great to have you.
It's good to be on. And tell your son don't worry about the haircut. Hair grows back.
I'm going to tell him that. Because the other day, I swear, Coach, over the summer, he was like, you know what? I crossed VMI off my list. I don't want to get the haircut. I don't want to do it. I know they're looking at me, but, Virginia Tech, Radford. And then the other day, he comes to me and he says, I'm thinking maybe VMI wouldn't be a bad choice. I just got to deal with the haircut because I saw one of my friends that just got recruited there, JT Inskeep. He looks pretty good in the uniform. So, Coach, you never know. I might be there every week watching him play pretty soon. Coach, you never know what life
brings. It's awesome. You couldn't play for a better coach than Jonathan Hadra, just a class man, really knows baseball, and again, the VMI education is second to none. And when you're done, you're in the top 1% earnings power for a lifetime. So, I think that's worth 4 years of having short hair.
I know, right? So,
yeah,
I gotta, we gotta keep them on this. But your VMI, I'm gonna get the football coach, I promise. But your VMI baseball team does a lot of recruiting in Hampton Roads. They've got several players that my son knows that committed there and entered there just recently. So your coaching staff on baseball does a lot of Southeastern Virginia recruiting. So, Coach, you never know, right? I might show up there in your office one day and say, hey, Coach, my son's pitching today. I got you an extra ticket. You never know. Okay, let's talk about your game coming up. Mars Hill at home, Lexington, 1:30, your home opener. Tell me a little about what to expect.
Well, their head football coach, Tim Clifton, has been there. This is his 25th season at Mars Hill, and he was assistant coach at VMI in 1983 and 1984, so he knows a little bit about us. They're very good on offense last season, scored 27 points a game and averaged 439 yards of offense, 280 of that passing. They like to throw it to their Division II All-American receiver, number two, Craig Rucker. He's 5'7", 175 pounds, very quick, talented receiver. And then number one, Tyler Ferguson, is on the other side, a 5'8", 175-pound senior receiver that was also All-South Atlantic Conference. Defensively, they basically have a four-down front. They're multiple. They like to bring pressure. They gave SoCon co-champion East Tennessee State University a great game last season in their opener. Score was 7-7 at the half. Ended up 28-7 in favor of ETSU. So, really good football team, really well coached, and they like to air it out, so there'll be a lot of balls flying around Saturday afternoon in Foster Stadium.
It's going to be a fun game. It's certainly not going to be 3 yards and a cloud of dust like the old days. Coach Walkenheim with us. You're playing a Division II football team. How do you get your players up? I mean, is there a problem with motivation for that? Like, okay, we're playing a D2 team. We're at home. We're expected to win. What is your motivational technique here?
Well, I hope there's not a problem motivating them, and there sure hasn't been this week in practice because, you know, you just show them the ETSU film from last year, and you show them how they compete against a SoCon champion. Then, you know, against Tusculum, who we fought hard to beat last year, who is in Mars Hills Conference, they lost a close game 28-31. And so 2 years ago, we lost to another team in that conference, Catawba. So I believe Mars Hill has our attention. And then, you know, Division II scholarships are a lot different than Division I, even though they have a lot less scholarship players than us. Division II players will go for a lot less money. It's more like baseball recruiting in that, you know, you get guys for different prices. And so while they may only have 21 scholarships to split up, or 36, which is the norm amongst Division II teams, they split it up in so many ways that they actually have, you know, more scholarship players on the roster than we do, you know, guys on some form of assistance. And they're also usually full with a lot of really talented transfer players that, you know, didn't make it work at whatever school they were at. And, you know, they go to that school and they're a dominant player.
And they want to play. I mean, that's it. Yep. You get the if you're at a Division One school and you're just not getting the time, you're not getting the PT for whatever reason, you want to play, you might go to a Mars Hill in order to get the PT, in order to get the playing time, get a look, maybe get better, and then go from there. That's, you know, in the baseball world, that's what happens with the kids that go to a community college, right? They just need another year of development or whatever. So some of those teams are pretty good. That's really what you have to look out for. Coach, let's go to the game last week. Look, the team you played is going to the championship. I mean, that is a very good football team, the Thundering Herd. What did you learn about your team last week, Coach?
A lot of positives in the game. So, you know, of the Marshall's 13 possessions, 8 of them they started behind their own 20-yard line. So we had 2 kickoffs where we tackled them behind the 20, which was just outstanding effort by our players hustling down. You know, Brett Howell was the first one down there, all 3 of our kickoffs. So I was very impressed with that. You know, 6 of our 9 punts were downed inside the 20, one at the 2-yard line by a true freshman, Algeric Mulray. So, you know, that was impressive that we were able to do that special teams-wise. And really, we only had one play on special teams that turned out poorly, but they were aided by a missed call when they blocked one of our players in the back. Also on special teams, 100% on our PAT and field goals tries, which people who have watched us the last few years will realize what a great accomplishment that was for VMI football. Another huge accomplishment, which has not happened much here at VMI, is we won the turnover takeaway battle 2-1. We got 2 takeaways from Marshall and only turned it over once, and that was our last offensive play of the game. So, you know, Will Button with a great interception, Eric Weaver with a fumble recovery that was caused by Austin Barrett. I think you saw some of our explosive potential on offense with Reese Yudinski to Javion Laura, and you saw the potential that Rohan Martin has in the slot. And then, you know, if you take away the yards lost rushing due to sacks, you know, our running backs average 4.1 yards per carry, which is a big improvement for us. You know, Alex Ramsey carried 11 times for 45 yards, Corey Bridey 6 times for 25 yards, and 1 time for Tyon Smith for 5 yards. So, you know, I was impressed with all those things out there. And the one thing that you don't really see is that Jared Richmond and Jordan Ward in the defensive line, you know, stepped up, played tough, hard-nosed physical football, and, you know, gave us a chance, you know, in that game just to keep it close.
Absolutely. You know, that is, when you play a good team like that on the road and it's your first game, look, some things are going to be exposed. You're going to have some of the things that you talked about. But I thought there was a lot of positives in that game. And you pointed out the biggest one, you know, having watched VMI football for a long time, last season's the special team issues were really a problem. And you straighten that out. 2 PATs, 1 field goal, tackling multiple times behind the 20. I mean, if there's anything I think that stood out was, okay, looks like Coach Walk has fixed the special team woes. Mars Hill, look, you're at home, and you look at their defense as they did. And if you go back to the D1 tape they have, that was 1 year back. But if you look at their defense, they might look a little vulnerable in the secondary. They don't seem to have the speed there to match up with you guys. I would assume we're really going to see this thing aired out.
You know, I'm sure Coach Clifton would like me to tell him on the phone what we're going to do. But, you know, I think each game takes upon a story upon itself. And we are primarily a passing team because some of the passes that we throw, we feel are ball control run games that are designed to stretch the defense sideline to sideline. So, you know, yeah, the ball will be in the air for us more times than, you know, a lot of times, definitely more than Citadel will throw it. But, you know, if the run is there and there's a short box, you know, we're going to be content to run the football, and we think we can do both equally well offensively this season.
Coach, this is a big game for you. You're at home. I don't want to put the pressure on, but you're at home. You're playing a D2 team. You're expected to win this game, so there's a lot of pressure on your players to come out and really don't give them a sense that they can win the game. Because, you know, when you're on the other side of this, when you're the underdog and you're outmatched, and all of a sudden you get to the half and like it was against your SOCOM championship last season at 7-7, all of a sudden you give the other team hope and they think, hey, we can actually beat this team, right? So you don't want to do that. So you got to get off to the fast start. When I talk to you next week, what is the one thing tomorrow, Saturday, that you want to say that you were able to do, that you want to be able to say in a week, you know what, we wanted to do this Saturday, and this is what we did. What is it, Coach?
Well, we want to do the same thing every Saturday. You know, we've got a mission statement that's 10 toes down, and what that means is to be alert, to stand firm, to be a man, to be strong, and to do everything in love. And then we have three core values of grit, brotherhood, and purpose. And so we want to go out there and play with grit, which is resilience, you know, the ability to overcome adversity. Or we want to play with brotherhood, and that means we're playing for each other. And we want to play with a purpose. And, you know, and our purpose is to win football games, and our purpose is to be the best football player we can be when we're on the football field. And, you know, I think that's what we're looking for in every game. You know, do we have the never-say-die attitude? Do we play football the way VMI is supposed to play football? Are we going to win football games the way the VMI football team is supposed to win the VMI way? Those are the things that I look for, you know, every Saturday. How the game comes out, you know, how we win it, how we do those things, not all that important. You know, there's a lot of statistics out there. You know, if you start fast, you have a better chance of winning the game. If you win the last 4 minutes of the second half and the first 4 minutes of the third quarter, you have a better chance of winning the football game. If you win the turnover takeaway battle, if you win the explosive play battle, you have a better chance of winning the football game. So those are all things that you examine after the game. But while the game truly is going on, are we playing with grit, brotherhood, purpose, with all 10 toes down?
10 toes down. Coach Scott Wackenheim, big game at home, 1:30 kickoff, VMI in Lexington. That's Saturday, September 7th. You want to check it out? You can also hear the game if you can't be there live on all of our affiliates around Virginia, WLES, AM 590, Richmond and Central.
You're listening to the John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker.